brothers, sisters, friends of Our Lady. In the Book of Wisdom, we read a quote which the liturgy applies to the Blessed Mother. From the beginning and before the world was I created, and unto the world to come I shall not cease to be. In the holy dwelling place have I ministered before him. During this talk, I would like to present the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe as a pivotal point of history. Of course, when the Son of God took flesh at the Incarnation, that was the pivotal point of all history. We record all dates from that event. Yet Christ chose a mother, and she has been very active in the history of salvation since that time. At Guadalupe, we see her standing at the crossroads of civilization, the Old World, Europe, and the New World, the Americas. At this conference, some of the speakers are going to be covering certain topics which I will not be covering in depth. These include the Aztec Indians, Mexico, the conquest of Cortez, as well as the day-to-day account of the apparitions of Our Lady. However, for the sake of those who are not readily familiar with the story, I would like to start out with a very short synopsis. In the pre-dawn of Saturday, December 9th, 1531, Juan Diego, a recently converted Aztec Indian, walked from his hut on Lake Texcoco to reach the city of Tlalco, both in present-day Mexico City. He was on his way to hear Mass in honor of Mary, the Immaculate Mother of God. As he crossed the small hill of Tepeyac, he heard music and then saw a beautiful maiden. She was dressed in a rose with a blue mantle. She spoke and asked him to take a message to the Bishop of Mexico City. Bishop Zumarraga did not at first believe Juan, which Juan later that day relayed to the lady. She asked him once more to go to the bishop, who then requested a sign. On December 10th, she listened to Juan's message and promised the sign on the following morning. But when Juan reached the home of his uncle Juan Bernardino, with whom he lived, he found him very ill. Juan took care of him through that night and the following day. During the course of the following night, Juan Bernardino asked for a priest as he believed that he was dying. Juan Diego started out, but suddenly remembered his unfulfilled mission from the lady. He tried to go around Tepeyac Hill by a different route, but the lady came down the hill to greet him, to reassure him of his uncle's health, and to send him once again to the bishop, this time with an armload of Castilian roses. As soon as Juan was admitted to the bishop's presence, he opened his outer garment or tilma and let the cascade of roses drop to the floor. The bishop was amazed, but even more stunned, to see an image of the maiden on the rough outer garment. When Juan returned home, his healed uncle related to Juan his own encounter with the lady. A light had flooded his room, and the beautiful lady appeared, telling him of Juan's mission to the bishop. She requested that her title be known as the Ever-Virgin Holy Mary of Guadalupe. This was cause for further astonishment to the bishop. The word Guadalupe cannot be spelled nor pronounced in the Aztec language. Bishop Zumarraga had difficulty understanding one, since Aztec contains no G's or D's. The Aztec word could have been Tecuatlupe, which means who saves us from the devourer, or it could have been Coatlasupe, which means she who breaks, stamps, or crushes the serpent. To the Aztecs, this meant the serpent god, whom they adored or worshipped by human sacrifice. Guadalupe had absolutely no meaning in Mexico to the Aztecs, but to Bishop Zumarraga and the Spaniards, it was the name of a famous Marian shrine in Spain. The significance of the apparition of Our Lady to the humble Aztec Indian Juan Diego needs to be studied in the fuller picture which history provides: the Old World and its traditions, the newly discovered world, and the events which took place afterwards on both continents. We will begin this study in the monastery of Santa Maria de Guadalupe in today's Cáceres province of Extremadura, Spain. This is southwest of Madrid and north-northwest of Seville. It's in the western part of Spain. There, a statue is revered, reputed to have been carved by St. Luke the Evangelist. Pope Gregory I, who reigned from 590 to 604, carried the statue in procession through Rome in order to stem the plague of that city. It was then passed to Spain and given by this pope to St. Leander, Archbishop of Seville. For the next 100 years, it seems, the Cathedral Church of Seville was honored to house the statue. In 711, when the Moors took Seville, they defeated a group of fighting soldiers under Don Rodrigo, the leader of the Visigoths. The priests from Seville fled northward, concealed the statue in an iron casket, and hid it buried in a cave located in the hills near the river in Extremadura. The same route today by car takes almost 4 hours. The Muslims, during their Spanish occupation, built up cities, reshaped many landmarks, and renamed most of the geographical points. Thus, the river became known by the Islamic term Guadalupe, Guada meaning river, and Lupe, the wolf. And the city which later adopted this name has many buildings of Moorish architecture. After the overthrow of Moorish occupation, our Blessed Lady appeared to a herdsman, Gil Cordeno, requesting him to ask the priest to dig at the site of the apparition and told him where the statue and its authenticating documents might be found. Excavating priests rediscovered the hidden statue in the year 1326 and built a small shrine to enclose it. Pilgrims began arriving, and King Alfonso XI took a personal interest in the shrine's development, attributing his victory over the Moors at the Battle of Rio Salado to the Virgin's intercession. In 1340, the Royal Monastery of Guadalupe was erected on the Guadalupe River in Spain to house this statue. The statue is of the Blessed Virgin holding the child Jesus in one hand and a crystal scepter in the other, signifying her divine motherhood. Hence, the famous Catholic image in Spain has been known since the 14th century by the Islamic name of Our Lady of Guadalupe. In 1386, the shrine was commended to a contemplative Augustinian community, but in more modern times, the monastery was given into the care of the Franciscans. After Our Lady of El Pilar, this shrine became the second most frequented shrine by pilgrims in Spain. The Virgin of Guadalupe had become one of the most important figures in Spain and Spanish America. It was there, in the presence of Queen Isabella, that Christopher Columbus signed his contract to go to the New World. He then gave the name Guadalupe to one of the islands he discovered. Unfortunately, that has been changed. It's in the Caribbean, but it's now under the control of the French. It was also at this shrine that Columbus and the Franciscan friars who sailed to America with him prayed. When he returned from his voyage with 6 American Indians, they were instructed and baptized there. Extremadura was the homeland of many conquistadors, including Hernando Cortes. It was there that Cortes and the first 12 Franciscan friars who sailed with him to the Americas prayed. We will now follow them to the New World, where there were no geographical boundaries as in the present day, to a strip of land now known as Mexico. The Aztecs were the ones who ruled most of Central America in the 1500s. Their empire extended from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean and included the lands of Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, and portions of the Honduras and El Salvador. Montezuma II, also named Montezuma the Younger, became king of the Aztecs in 1503. He was considered by the Aztecs to be the earthly representative of the sun god. He demanded heavy tribute from the surrounding Indian tribes and was poised to conquer the few remaining regions of the dying Mayan civilization. He ruled from the capital Tenochtitlan and its sister city Tlatelolco, both situated on an island in Lake Texcoco, the site of modern Mexico City. The city of Tenochtitlan was the center of religious worship for the Aztecs, since they believed that the gods required human sacrifice to subsist. The priests, in order to appease the frightful deities, each year sacrificed thousands of living humans. Generally, these were Indians captured from the surrounding tribes, but many times it was their own people, even children. Besides the sun, the moon, the stars, and many other gods, there are three that I would like to discuss because they are important to understanding the history of Our Lady of Guadalupe. The first was Quetzalcoatl, the stone serpent, to whom at times thousands per day were sacrificed. The second was Tenochtitlan, considered the mother goddess, who was depicted as a terrifying figure with her head comprised of snakes and her garment a mass of writhing serpents. Her eyes projected fathomless grief. Tenochtitlan was worshipped at a stone temple in Tepeyac, about 5 miles from the capital, Tenochtitlan, Mexico City. This was the hill on which Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared. The third god they considered the unknown god. He was believed to be the creator of all things, and he was also known as he by whom everything lives, he is who is by or present to all things. Now, of course, we believe in divine providence, that God is the creator of all things, but to them, this was a very fearful god who sort of a spying presence and an avenging god. So to them, it was definitely a worship of fear. The discovery of America by Christopher Columbus in 1492 led to the exploration and colonization of the entire Caribbean by the Spaniards. The conquistadors, much like the Crusaders, were variably in search of fortune, personal glory, and God, and oftentimes it was all three. The Spaniard, Hernando Cortes, landed on the Gulf shore of Mexico on Good Friday, April 22, 1519, with 508 soldiers on 11 ships, 100 sailors, 16 horses, a few cannons, crossbows, and other pieces of artillery. They named the landing site Veracruz, the True Cross. Mass was offered on Easter Sunday, and Cortes worked alongside his men to build a fort and left a contingent to protect the new settlement. He then sent one ship back to Spain with a letter that detailed their discovery for King Charles V. And then, in a strategic military move, he had the other ships totally destroyed. He didn't want any of his men deciding they didn't want to do this. Okay, the expedition first arrived at Sempoalo, where the heavily taxed tribe pledged their allegiance to Cortes. They continued through Jalapa and headed towards Tlaxcala. The fierce Tlaxcalans finally joined forces with Cortes and ultimately proved to be his most valuable allies. On his march to Tenochtitlan, Montezuma planned a trap in Cholula for Cortes, but the Spaniards overwhelmed the Cholulan tribe and left 5,000 dead. Because Montezuma believed that Cortes was the returning god, Quetzalcoatl, he refused to attack him and actually welcomed him on his arrival into Tenochtitlan, November 8, 1519. He housed the Spaniards in the palace of Montezuma's father. The Spaniards were appalled at the horrible spectacle of human sacrifice, and Cortes asked Montezuma to stop. Montezuma tried to bribe them. He offered them gifts of gold, silver, and jewels, but he would not stop the demonic rituals. Sacrifices of adults and even children continued, and the Spaniards were awakened each morning by the screams of sacrificial victims. Cortes boldly placed Montezuma under house arrest 1 week after his arrival and confined him to his palace. Soon afterwards, for political reasons, Cortes left the city and placed Pedro de Alvarado in charge of Tenochtitlan. During the festival of the sun god in the spring of 1520, Alvarado decided to surround the Aztecs during their ritual ceremony in the temples and slaughtered the unarmed celebrants. This outraged the Aztecs so much that they rose in arms, and Montezuma's brother, who had taken charge, assumed leadership and fiercely attacked the Spaniards. Montezuma died in the battle, and Cortes returned to Tenochtitlan to find the city in open warfare. The Spaniards and Tlaxcalans were soundly defeated and driven from the city on the night of sorrow, June 30, 1520. Cortes returned the following May with a massive army of native Indians, mostly Tlaxcalans. They found half the population dead from smallpox, including Montezuma's brother. The new leader fought Cortes for 93 days but had to surrender the city on August 13, 1521. The once glorious city of Tenochtitlan was destroyed, and with it the Aztec practice of human sacrifice. The conquest of Mexico City was complete. Historians have puzzled over these historical events, but it seems that they have come up to a consensus that there were three reasons that Cortes was able to take the city of Tenochtitlan. The arrival of the Spanish conquistadors with their metal breastplates, snorting horses, loud smoking guns, and vicious dogs proved a frightening spectacle to the Indians. Second, Cortes, through the Indian interpreter Dona Marina, cleverly won over outlying Indian tribes, such as the Tlaxcalans, who resented the heavy tribute demanded by the Aztecs. In addition, the Aztecs and others had no immunity to smallpox, which was brought to American shores by the Europeans who were decimated in a smallpox epidemic that began in 1520. The amazement of the Indians has been a recurring theme for most historians during the past four centuries. They speculate that the Spaniards were thought to be gods. Some think that Montezuma and the Aztec believed Cortes was the ancient god king Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, returning to assert his rule. As we look deeper, the historical events become complete. Strange events and omens were recorded which preceded and foretold the coming of Cortes and his men. A comet appeared and split in three. Water of the lake boiled up in a rage. A sign like a tongue of fire burned up into the heavens. But the most amazing event was the prophecy of Princess Papitzin, Montezuma's sister. She had fallen ill in a coma and was buried in a tomb in 1509. However, hearing her cry, they opened the tomb. She related a dream that profoundly influenced the superstitious king. In her dream, a luminous being with a black cross on his forehead led her to a shore of a boundless ocean where she saw a large number of huge ships with black crosses on their sails that would come to conquer the Aztec and bring them knowledge of the true God. It was only 10 years later that the conquistadors of Spain arrived on the shores of Mexico. Thus, when Montezuma was brought a Spanish helmet bearing the black cross, he was convinced that his kingdom was to come to an end, and he began to lavish gifts on the Spaniards in hopes of buying them off. After the conquest, Cortes began to demolish the blood-soaked altars and converting the temples into Catholic churches. In 1524, the first 12 Franciscan missionaries arrived in Mexico City. The next year, a Franciscan priest baptized Princess Papitzin, along with the Indian who would be known as Juan Diego, his wife Maria, and Juan's uncle, Juan Bernardino, who had raised him since his parents had died. Juan and his wife traveled 30 miles on foot to the church in Mexico City for Mass and instructions. In 1529, Juan's wife Maria died, and Juan moved back with his aged uncle to be able to take care of him. In 1528, Friar Juan de Zumarraga arrived in the New World. Meantime, an administration of 5 ministers had been set up by Charles V to rule Mexico. One of these, Don Nuno de Guzman, was a cruel, harsh man. In 1530, Bishop-elect Juan Zumarraga succeeded in getting word to Charles V to replace Guzman with Bishop Don Sebastian Ramirez, a man of unquestioned integrity. But it may have been too late, since it would take 3 months for the new minister to arrive and months of reconstruction to salvage the explosive situation. By 1531, most of the Aztecs were ready to take arms and kill all the Spaniards. It was at this point that Bishop Zumarraga secretly prayed to Our Lady to intervene and avert the eruption. He asked her to send him Castilian roses, unknown in Mexico, as a sign that his desperate prayer had been heard. So when on December 12, 1531, Juan Diego was told by Our Lady on Tepeyac to take Castilian roses to the Spanish bishop, we can certainly see what a confirmation he must have received that his prayer was heard. The news of the appearance of the Indian mother who left her imprint on the tilma spread like wildfire. 3 points were appreciated by the native population. First of all, the lady, at least to them, was Indian. She spoke Nahuatl, the Aztec language, and appeared to an Indian, not to a Spaniard. Juan Diego explained that she appeared at Tepeyac, the place of Tonatzin, the mother goddess, sending a clear message that the Virgin Mary was the mother of the true God, and that the Christian religion was to replace the Aztec religion. The Indians, who learned through pictures and symbols, understood the image of the tilma, which revealed the beautiful message of Christianity. The true God sacrificed himself for mankind, instead of the horrendous life they had endured, sacrificing humans to appease the frightful gods. Until 1531, the Aztec had resisted the advances of the missionaries in embracing Christianity, which would have entailed abandonment of polygamy. But as the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe spread, great numbers began to long for this new moral code, based on the example portrayed by a mother, the mother of the true God, clean, radiantly pure in virtue and love. It is no wonder that over the next 7 years, from 1531 to 1538, 9 million natives of Mexico converted to Catholicism. Churches, monasteries, convents, hospitals, schools, and workshops sprang up all over the country in the wake of this phenomenal missionary conquest. In 1552, the University of Mexico, which is still the largest in Latin America, was established by papal and royal decree and placed on an equal footing with the celebrated University of Salamanca in Spain. New episcopal sees were founded, and before long, Catholic Mexico was sending native-born missionaries abroad. The United States was beneficiaries of these missionaries. Some came to Florida, others to California. Others went off to Japan, where the glorious martyrs, St. Philip of Jesus and his companions, suffered for the faith in 1597. Through the years, many miraculous events have confirmed the sacredness and the protection afforded the country by the sacred image. In 1545, a typhus plague, and in 1629, a flood inundating Mexico and drowning 30,000 people, were both averted immediately when Our Lady of Guadalupe was petitioned to carry the people's prayers to God. In 1736, a typhus plague, which had claimed 700,000 lives, was immediately subsided when Our Lady of Guadalupe was proclaimed National Patroness of Mexico. All these events and more are recorded and verified. In 1920, under Cáez, the church was persecuted. Churches were closed and priests and nuns were martyred. He did not dare to close the shrine for fear of the people, so he planned a plot. Cáez had a bomb placed in a flower vase directly under the tilma. On November 14, 1921, at the 10:30 High Mass, the bomb ripped out chunks of marble, shattered stained glass windows, and bent an iron cross on the devastated altar. No one was seriously injured. The image was completely unscathed, and the thin protective glass was not even cracked. The twisted iron cross is displayed in a glass case nearby. For a moment, let's take another look at the old world. At the same time that the Catholic faith was spreading so rapidly in the Americas, Europe was suffering the results of the rebellion of Martin Luther and other reformers. The Protestant revolt was introducing a new breed of religion, tearing millions of people from Holy Mother Church, weakening political powers as it broke apart nations. The Islamic forces took this opportunity to build up a huge naval force in the Mediterranean. 40 years after Our Lady appeared to Juan Diego, she unassumingly became responsible for a significant turning point in the history of Western civilization. Throughout Europe, copies of the Holy Image had been circulated. In 1570, the second Bishop of Mexico, Archbishop Montafar, sent oil-painted copies of the image to King Philip II of Spain. One of these first copies was given to Admiral Giovanni Andre Doria, one of three admirals commanding the Catholic forces at Lepanto. The young admiral took the picture aboard his flagship when he assumed command of a flotilla of ships sailing from Genoa. On October 7, 1571, the Catholic naval forces, primarily from Spain, Venice, and Genoa, under the command of Don Juan of Austria, were to sail to the Gulf of Lepanto. Knowing that the Christian forces were at a distinct material disadvantage, the Holy Pontiff, St. Pope Pius V, called for all of Europe to pray the rosary for victory. Some 300 Turkish ships stood in battle array, blocking entrance to the Gulf. The Christian navy of 206 galleys attempted to meet the Turks head-on, but was outnumbered and outmaneuvered by the Turkish force. The right division consisted of 53 galleys under Admiral Doria. Doria was cut off from the rest of the Christian fleet. At this crucial moment, he went to his cabin and knelt in prayer before the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. He implored her to save his men and his ships. Miraculously, by nightfall, the tide of battle had turned. One Turkish squadron was captured, and others were thrown into panic and disarray. Much of the Turkish fleet was destroyed. Admiral Doria imputed to the Virgin of Guadalupe the victory over the Ottoman Empire forces. At the hour of victory, St. Pope Pius V, who was hundreds of miles away at the Vatican, is said to have gotten up from a meeting, went over to a window, and exclaimed, "The Christian fleet is victorious." That day, the Turks lost all but 30 of its ships and as many as 30,000 men. 15,000 Christians enslaved in the Turks' galleys were freed. The Battle of Lepanto was the last great naval battle fought under oars. We know today that the victory was decisive. It prevented the Islamic invasion of Europe and advanced the hand of God working through Our Lady. Admiral Doria's copy of Our Lady of Guadalupe is now enshrined in the Church of San Stefano in Oviedo, Italy. At the Monastery of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Estremadura, Spain, one can view a huge warship lantern that was captured from the Muslims in the Battle of Lepanto. So once again, going back to Mexico, 13 days after the first bishop-elect of Mexico beheld the Castilian roses tumbling from Atilma and the greater miracle that it retained, Our Lady of Guadalupe had the shrine she had requested. It stood on the hillside, an adobe building that went up in a hurry to satisfy the unprecedented enthusiasm of the Aztecs. Her painting, by what it said to them, fired the Aztecs with a determination to give the Holy Mother her church by Christmas. They succeeded. It turned out to be scarcely larger than an ordinary chapel, but it was solidly built. The dedication attracted crowds. Nothing before had ever brought so many Spaniards and Indians together in a common cause. They marched in procession from the cathedral in Mexico City to Tepeyac, a distance of 3.5 miles, singing or listening prayerfully. Hernando Cortes and his Marquesa walked with them. The way was then cleared for the bearers of the precious Tilma, who with great caution took it through the aisles to the sanctuary and hung it over the altar. Bishop Zumarraga blessed the chapel, all the people within, and the throngs waiting outside. He then offered Mass on the altar beneath her portrait. Juan Diego spent so much of his time in this little chapel day after day that the bishop appointed him its custodian and had a hut built for him adjacent to it. Here he lived out his remaining years, taking care of the portrait, serving Mass beneath it, and telling his story to the pilgrims. Between 1544 and 1548, the bishop was doing an investigation and asked Juan Diego to show to him the place where Our Lady had appeared when she came down Tepeyac Hill and met him at the fourth apparition. At that time, they found a spring in that location, which was clear, odorous, and slightly acidic, but it has since been attributed to many healings. In 1548, on May 30th, Juan Diego went to receive his reward. The original adobe building, after 90 years of possession, gave up its treasure to a second, larger shrine on the hilltop, which in 1709 yielded the precious keepsake to the much larger, but now scarcely large enough building, large enough basilica. An average of 15,000 people a day visit it. The basilica takes in an attendance in excess of 5 million a year, rating second only to St. Peter's in Rome as a religious center of attraction. Unfortunately, this beautiful structure, now referred to as the Old Basilica, has been condemned due to its sinking as a result of the weakness of the ground, since the city is built on a lake. The latest building to house the Tilma, the modern basilica, was built between 1974 and 1976. Repairs have recently been made for the old basilica to be reopened to the public, but it no longer houses the Tilma. There was never any question to the missionaries that the picture on the Tilma of Mary was that of the Mother of God. She revealed herself to the Indian as she who crushes the serpent, which in biblical and Catholic terminology refers to her great privilege of the Immaculate Conception. The Franciscan order, through the centuries, has championed the cause of Mary's Immaculate Conception. They observed this feast with an octave, throughout which the Mexican faithful celebrate festivities. Bishop Zumarraga, on Christmas Eve, wrote to Cortes in Mexico informing him of the ceremony of the dedication of the first chapel on Tepeyac. The letter concludes, "How glorious this will be. The joy of it all is indescribable. Tell my lady, the Marquesa, that eventually I want to dedicate my cathedral to the Immaculate Conception, because it was during that feast that God and His Mother deigned to shower the land you won with this great favor." Signed, Bishop-Elect, filled with joy. As devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe spread, the popes were eager to ratify this devotion of the people by placing them under the protection of Mary Immaculate under this title of Our Lady of Guadalupe. The interesting connection is that Our Lady had appeared before there were any boundaries. And so interestingly, when the bishops of the United States wanted to choose a patroness, they wanted to put the United States under the patronage of the Immaculate Conception. In 1792, John Carroll, Bishop of Baltimore, and America's first Roman Catholic bishop, consecrated the newly created United States under the protection of the Blessed Virgin Mary under the title of the Immaculate Conception. In 1847, Pope Pius IX formalized Carroll's acclamation, proclaiming the Immaculate Conception as the patroness of the United States. And this was several years before Pius IX solemnly defined and declared her Immaculate Conception to be a dogma of faith, which was 1854. So when in 1920 construction was begun on the National Basilica of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., the plans included a side chapel of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Coming down to our own century, in 1910, Pope St. Pius X declared the Virgin of Guadalupe patroness of Latin America. He also granted indulgences which may be gained in any part of the world for praying before a copy of the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. We have now seen the concern and protection of our mother intimately woven into the history of two worlds of the 16th century. She desires, and the Church has declared her to be the patroness and protectress of the Americas. Pope Pius XII, in his radio address, October 12, 1945, speaking to Mexicans and all Americans, develops the theme of Mary's royal protection. He noted that she had chosen a location midway between the two continents in which to make her appearance, so as to demonstrate her equal concern for North America and South America. In naming her the Empress of America, Pope Pius was honestly interpreting her desire expressed to Juan Diego that on this hemisphere there are no divisions to her all-embracing empire of charity. It covers every square mile of the vast expanse of land from the farthermost border of Canada to the extreme tip of Argentina, from the Atlantic to the Pacific seaboards. In 1946, Pope Pius XII declared her to be the patroness of the Americas and ordered the image of Guadalupe to be solemnly crowned. He declared, "Hail, O Virgin of Guadalupe, we to whom the admirable ordering of Providence has confided the sacred treasure of divine wisdom on earth, for the salvation of souls, we place again upon your brow the crown that forever places under your powerful patronage the purity and integrity of the Mexican faith and of the entire American continent. For we are certain that as long as you are recognized as Queen and Mother, Mexico and America will be safe." Does our Heavenly Mother have some predestined purpose for the Americas? Perhaps assuring them of their ultimate protection and safety, as Pope Pius XII believed. Today, we see a striking parallel between our age and that of the Aztec civilization immediately before the apparitions of 1531. Millions wander in a fog of uncertainty, unbelief, and atheism. Society is dominated by godlessness, pagan excess, and immorality. Polygamy and depravity of the Aztecs are more than matched by today's universal moral collapse. Great numbers of those who profess to be Catholics have been led astray due to modernism, ecumenism, and indifference. False deities abound everywhere. Countless innocents today are sacrificed alive on the altars of abortion due to sensuality and selfishness. Christian culture is threatened with total destruction by modern ideologies, such as the Aztec nation faced total decimation because of their pagan religion. Islam is spreading its control with the continual and increasing threat of war. A decisive collision seems to be inevitable and imminent, as it was in 1531. 477 years ago, God's Mother left us a tangible pledge of hope. She gave us this pledge in order to counter the worldwide rationalist revolt against God, which had its beginnings in the Protestant Reformation and is now reaching its terrible climax. We need our Mother to stand with us through this crisis, just as she stood at the crossroads of 16th century civilization. From the center of the American continent, there blazes a beacon of reassurance in a nightmarish world. A star, a supernatural statue of liberty holding up the light of the world, the truth that will set men really free, and proclaim to the people who walk in darkness a wondrous message of thrilling hope. Let us turn to Our Lady of Guadalupe with prayer and confidence. The power of our Mother is no less today than it has been throughout history. However, in order to be worthy of her motherly protection, we must be her servants and take up her work, the same work which she gave to Juan Diego. And this is quoting directly from her words to Juan Diego. Know for sure, my dearest, littlest, and youngest son, that I am the perfect and ever-Virgin Holy Mary, Mother of the God of Truth, through whom everything lives, the Lord of all things near us, the Lord of heaven and earth. I want very much to have a little house built here for me, in which I will show him, I will exalt him, and make him manifest. I will give him to the people in all my personal love, in my compassion, in my help, in my protection. Because I am truly your merciful mother, yours and all the people who live united in this land, and of all the other people of different ancestries, my lovers who love me, those who seek me, those who trust in me. Here I will hear their weeping, their complaints, and heal all their sorrows, hardships, and sufferings. And to bring about what my compassionate and merciful concern is trying to achieve, you must go to the bishop. Report to him exactly all you have seen, admired, and what you have heard. Know for sure I will appreciate it very much. Be grateful and will reward you. And you will deserve very much the reward I will give you for your fatigue, the work and trouble that my mission will cause you. Now, my dearest son, you have heard my breath, my word. Go now and put forth your best effort. Listen to me, my youngest and dearest son. Know for sure that I do not lack servants and messengers to whom I can give the task of carrying out my words, who will carry out my will. But it is very necessary that you plead my cause, and with your help and through your mediation, that my will be fulfilled. I am the ever-Virgin, Holy Mary, the Mother of God, who is sending you. Thank you, and may God and Our Lady of Guadalupe bless you.